the key themes for this Pauline year dedicated to the bimillennium of the birth of the Apostle of the Gentiles has been the search for closer unity amongst all Christian churches and communities. Announcing the celebration of this special year dedicated to St. Paul in the presence of the ecumenical patriarch Bartholomew I, Pope Benedict stressed that, like St. Peter, the Apostle of the Gentiles did all he could for the unity and harmony of all Christians. In the same way, he said, all Christians today are called to work in a humble and sincere way for the complete unity of all the parts of the mystical body of Christ. But just how much is this work a priority for the Catholic Church today? Or how much has the so-called ecumenical winter served to dampen enthusiasm in the search for full Christian unity?
One has really to study the ecumenical problem seriously in the local area.
Theologian Peter DeMay is a professor at Belgium's Catholic University of Louvain, as well as serving as director of a centre for ecumenical studies there and working closely with the European Association of Ecumenical Research.
Well, of course, one cannot deny that there is indeed a certain lack of enthusiasm. We are confronted with it, we experience it, for example, within Belgium, where my major assignment is located at the Catholic University of Louvain. I'm also part of the National Commission for Ecumenism of the Roman Catholic Church, and we organize, for example, each year an entire study day on ecumenical issues and themes. And unfortunately, we see that the people who are interested in it and who attend this one-day study day, they become each year a bit older and older. So it's sometimes hard to reach out to the young. This is not, I think, still it remains a very important task to pay attention to that and to do that. And then once again, when I see in my own university, when I am offering a course in ecumenism, both in the Dutch section and the international section, we are able to have about 40 students. And I find it really important as part of such a course at master level to organize also an excursion, because Belgium is in majority a Catholic country. But this year, for example, in spring, we had a three-day excursion to Utrecht in the Netherlands in connection with the Calvin year, especially to pay attention to Reformed Catholic relationships. And during such a weekend excursion, I invite our students who are in majority Roman Catholic students to take part in beautiful celebrations and also to not only to listen to valuable speakers, but also to have contact with local initiatives in ecumenism. And often the students tell me that during such a weekend they learn actually much more than just by attending a whole several months taught course. You see, it's out of the lived experience and the meeting, the encounter with Christians from other churches that your interest in ecumenism is fostered and grows. And we have to hope that then such students later on in their own pastoral circles where they will be engaged will develop a similar enthusiasm and interest in ecumenism. I think we have to really to work hard and not just purely on the academic level, and let's hope that then the ecumenical winter gradually is broken.
Do you believe that within the Catholic Church, though, this is a priority, both at the grassroots level that you're talking about, but also at leadership level?
Interesting question. At grassroots level, it really depends a bit. Whether, for example, the diocesan bishop has some interest in ecumenism, whether the diocesan ecumenical commission, but also the national ecumenical commissions, whether also the council of churches, whether this functions in a good way in a given area. A couple of years ago, I had one doctoral student who was a Roman Catholic priest from Nigeria who wanted to make a dissertation on ecumenism in Africa, and he rather sadly discovered, even through empirical research, that even what is allowed in the ecumenical directory on behalf of the Roman Catholic Church isn't always put into practice in many African Roman Catholic countries and episcopal conferences. So there is still a lot of work to be done on that as well. As far as the universal level is concerned, here I think there is an urgent need that the results of the ecumenical dialogues, which have taken place over the last four decades in most cases, that the results are better known and also are to a far greater extent officially received. Of course, we remain very thankful that 1999, the Lutheran Roman Catholic dialogue process ended up for the first time in a common declaration on justification. And this was a very important moment and a moment of clear reception of the ecumenical progress which had been made in this regard. But until now, this is in a way the only most recent example of such an official reception of the results of a dialogue of such a declaration. And it is an example which also didn't remain uncriticized, also among Lutheran scholars and theologians in Germany, to give but one example. But still, at that moment, one discovered that one can only make progress if one applies a method which is commonly called the method of looking for a differentiated consensus, or a consensus which allows for differences. And it is very much in line with Vatican II, Roman Catholic ecclesiology, which also requires contact between churches that unity is sought in what is necessary, but that a lot of theological, spiritual, liturgical, even canonical differences can be legitimate among churches and contribute to unity in diversity. And in this way, I can only hope that a number of other bilateral and multilateral dialogues, which are mostly treating ecclesiological themes for the moment, such as the quest within faith and order to come to a common reflection on the Church entitled The Nature and Mission of the Church, that the dialogue processes can have some progress, but that they also are officially received and thankfully welcomed by official church bodies within the Roman Catholic Church itself. And I think that here still a lot of work needs to be done, but there are signs of hope.
One of the difficulties, surely, is that this work between the official dialogues is very academic, and it's quite difficult finding the language, perhaps, to make it available, accessible to ordinary people in the pews at grassroots level.
Yes, I see your point. And here I have the impression that there's quite a lot of difference between the different dialogue texts. I have the impression, for example, that the work within faith and order, especially the nature and mission of the Church, is quite, at least for interested Catholics at grassroots levels, is quite accessible. It hasn't been written in a too much elevated style. But on the contrary, for example, the work of the Lutheran Catholic Dialogue, even my own students are only able to read and digest such texts only if you explain them well and with a lot of difficulty. But of course, the same counts also for a number of encyclical letters of Roman pontiffs, which are also not always easy, and it's necessary in a way that specialists try to talk about interesting core themes within such letters and within such dialogue texts and try to speak about them and to translate them to the local context. However, I believe that in a number of recent dialogue texts, much more attention is also made to the dimension of mission. And already the text which I mentioned from Faith and Order, the nature and mission of the Church, not exclusively reflects on how we have to conceive about Church, which kind of images do we have to use and apply to the Church, but also how can we, among Christian churches, meet a number of problems in society or problems connected with poverty, which the HIV, AIDS, pandemia, and so on. How can we cooperate between Christian churches, and how can we realize what is often, which looks very nice on paper, how can we achieve what is often called common witness? This is one of the really important challenge for Christian churches. Also within Europe, for example, a document like Charta Ecumenica puts it among the priorities for the Christian churches to engage together in common witness, common proclamation of the gospel. But it's so hard; it remains such a challenge to put into practice. But this is something this can become very very much concrete, and that's why I think that when a number of dialogue texts pay much more attention to the common engagement of churches in view of mission and proclamation, that this is not a very difficult academic idea, but it needs to receive flesh and blood. To become flesh and blood, it needs to be articulated in life, and I think it's a task of ecumenists also to especially focus on such tasks.
We're about to mark shortly the centenary of that first World Missionary Conference. Do you hope that this may give new impetus to this kind of shared witness you're talking about?
Well, definitely so. But of course, the original 1910 Edinburgh Conference was at that moment still pretty much an inner Protestant big moment, big celebration. But I believe it. Of course, it will in first instance be an important celebration, the 2010 centenary. There are, as I have been told, the official celebration will only allow a limited amount of representatives of the churches. But I think in many gremia, and one will pay attention to the relationship between unity and mission. And I think this is very, very much valuable and should indeed contribute to the realization of common witness. Here too, European Association for Ecumenical Research, of which I'm currently the president, Societas Ecumenica, has also decided to organize in August 2010 its biannual consultation on a similar theme, which is entitled Mission and Unity, Common Witness of Separated Churches, and which will also include a plea for the separated churches to further engage in common witness. So I think that by and large, the whole different congresses and meetings which will be organized on the occasion of Edinburgh 2010 will really have contributed to a greater attention to the links between mission and unity that we hope as ecumenists.
Finally, the goal, if you like, of all this work is, of course, full visible unity at the Eucharist. Do you still think this is a realistic goal for the ecumenical movement?
I believe we have to keep this in our mind and to continue working towards that. As a researcher who has studied many dialogue texts and also who regularly pays attention to the differences between previous versions and the final version of such texts, I also see, for example, that the work within Faith and Order, that, for example, the 1998 first draft, which was entitled The Nature and Purpose of the Church, still had a much, when it was speaking about the Eucharist, had a much more outspoken expectation with regard to realizing visible unity and also embodying it or working towards intercommunion, whereas the last 2005 text is a bit more realistic perhaps and speaks about the many hindrances which still exist in view of assessing each other's celebration of the Eucharist. But still I believe it's important to keep dreaming and speaking and reflecting towards what hinders the churches in fully working towards Eucharistic communion, because there is already a great amount of unity among Christian churches that we all in one way or another belong together to the body of Christ. But in line of St. Paul's reflections in the first letter to the Corinthians, belonging to the same body requires that you are also participating at the same Eucharistic table. And it remains very much a pity and perhaps also a sin that this is not yet possible among all the Christian churches. And we have to continue mentioning it in our text and trying to reflect and work towards overcoming this big problem.
And my thanks there to theologian Peter de May, Professor of Dogmatic Theology at Belgium's Louvain University.